Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Mrs. Simmons, the nurse held Beth's hand. Looks like you are in labor. Let's get you prepped and ready. Beth shot a stricken look at her husband. But, she began, the baby's not due for another 6 weeks. What should we do? The nurse was all business. We'll just get you ready and Dr. Martin will be here momentarily. She'll be able to assess what you'll need. But, Beth began to sputter, what will the baby need? Will it be able to survive, even? And then the tears began. Tom squeezed her hand. It'll be okay, honey. This is a very good hospital. They'll know what to do. He looked at the nurse with a hint of a smile. This isn't the first premature baby you've had here, right? He asked. The nurse patted Beth on the shoulder. We have a whole unit just for preemies, she responded. Oh, Beth yelped. That was another contraction. Dr. Martin better get moving. There's a lot I want to ask her. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about premature infants? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We're fortunate to have as our guest today a physician with special expertise in this area. Dr. Billy Short is Division Chief of Children's Neonatal Intensive Care Unit at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. A prominent neonatologist, she pioneered the use of ECMO, extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, which is a heart-lung machine for newborns with breathing problems. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Short.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you all today.
When is a baby technically regarded as premature or a preemie?
Well, the normal term pregnancy is 40 weeks. So any baby that's born below 37 weeks is considered a premature infant. So the 36-week baby, 35, 34, and actually on down to 23 weeks is the viability that we're at this period.
A baby survives at 23 weeks?
Yes, we have about the 23-week obviously is a very high-risk group, and only about 40% of those babies survive. But as you go up in gestation, that survival rate just skyrockets, really. Once you get to 25 weeks, it's up around 80% survival. And 28 weeks is around 95% survival now. So it's every week of gestation is just a key point during a pregnancy. So if you can make it one more week, it's a big change in outcome.
I'm astounded by that.
What are some of the causes for prematurity in infants? I'm sure there's a whole range, but there must be some that are pretty obvious.
Well, interestingly enough, you know, we have about 470,000 premature babies a year, and about half of those we don't know what the cause is.
Oh, wow.
And there's a lot of research going on. The big risk factors are related to infections, maternal infections, and unfortunately many of these infections are what we call silent infections. There is no sign in the mother. It's an infection in the baby's sac that covers the baby inside the mom in the placenta area. And those infections can be chronic, kind of hovering infections that we can pick up after birth, because when you look at the placenta, it shows signs of the infection at that point, but there was nothing in the mother to indicate that there was an infection ongoing. Now, other mothers will have fevers, and you'll know something's ongoing. You could start antibiotics, but the majority, again, are silent infections, which makes it very difficult to treat. So the infection risk is one of the highest. Multiple pregnancies, obviously having more than one, because the uterus responds to stretching. So if you have more than one baby, it clicks on the delivery process earlier. As the uterus gets larger, at a certain point, that turns on some of the mediators that cause labor to start. So that's why we see twins and triplets coming early, because mom is really only made to have one. So once you stretch it out too far, then the body says it's time to go and turns on labor. So those are risk factors. The other ones that mothers can control, smoking is a big one. Alcohol, taking care of yourself, not being overweight, not being too underweight, both extremes. things we may not be able to control are stress situations in your life, very critical periods that may happen that you obviously have no control over can trigger premature labor. So taking care of yourself, being followed by your physician, you know, nutrition is important. And again, unfortunately, the things that we can treat are very few and far between as far as stopping premature labor. We're still learning about that. There's some new drugs out. Progesterone is one where there's a recent study that this was able to decrease prematurity, but that study is being repeated in the United States, and we'll have to wait and see what the outcome. But that's giving us some hope because most of the drugs we've tried really haven't changed the premature rate. In fact, the premature rate's gone up over the last few years. So,
why do you think that's happened?
Part of it's multiple gestations. We're seeing a lot more twins and triplets, and again, due to, you know, in vitro fertilization techniques that come along, and some of it's that, and the other we're not really sure, because with the focus on prematurity, we are hoping that nutrition and taking care of yourself, you know, have been out there for a long time, and that doesn't seem to be changing, at least the percentages that we're seeing right now.
Are there people out there looking at environmental factors? There always are with almost everything.
Yeah, that's absolutely that's a good question. There's that's very sparse as far as looking at it. It's a difficult thing to study. We have groups looking at genetic disorders, mm-hmm. and some of our cardiologists at our hospital are actually studying well water contamination and have found some relationship with different contaminants and congenital heart disease, but we really haven't found anything at this point related to prematurity, but that's still a very unstudied area.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on premature infants.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Billy Short today about premature infants. What gives doctors the greatest concern about premature infants?
Well, the premature baby, and again, the smaller they are, is the more we have more concerns. The 23-week or 24, 25-week gestation baby is very, very fragile. So caring for that child and not having what we call iatrogenic problems happen is very much our focus with the nursing staff.
So can you explain that scientific
word? Yeah, what iatrogenic means is these babies have to have many treatments. So if you think of their bodies being very small, the first area we look at are their lungs, and the breathing ability of the babies are very impaired because of the small lungs, and the small airways in the lungs are not making the material that we all have to keep our air sacs open. That's called surfactant. And we're lucky now. We now have that product in a bottle, so we can put it down into the lungs to help the lungs open up. But in the first few hours, there's a period where that breathing, and even with the surfactant in these small kids, is still very difficult, so they have to be on breathing machines. Those breathing machines can cause damage. It's life-saving, but they also have to use high oxygen with them, and that high oxygen and the high pressures we have to use to get that air into these small lungs can cause damage. So,
what kind of damage are we talking
about? Well, it's called chronic lung disease, and the damage in the lungs, it will improve with time in majority of the kids. There are a handful of kids, again, based on how young they are, who go on to progress such severe chronic lung changes that they can't live from that. Their lungs just can't repair. But most of these kids, that lung injury will repair with time, but it makes us keep these infants on a ventilator breathing machine for a long period of time. So you have the lungs to deal with. The other big concern is the brain, and these babies have very fragile blood vessels in their brain. So when they come out, if they're stressed severely, those little blood vessels can break, and that's called interventricular hemorrhage. And depending on where it breaks and how much blood gets into the brain, there can be damage from that. Now, the good news is the majority are very small and go away, and we don't see long-term problems. But again, these very, very small babies can have severe bleeding into the brain and have long-term complications from that. So this is an area that there's a lot of research. The research is looking at the premature brain, but also the low levels of oxygen they experience when they come out can cause brain injury. And there's focus in that area on preventing that brain damage with different, hopefully, chemicals. And again, all of this research is not at the human bedside yet. It's experimental in the labs, but there's a lot of exciting research coming down the pike that may help us stabilize those little blood vessels in the brain and keep them from rupturing and causing harm down the line. But those are the biggest areas that we worry about. The other big area is feeding these babies and nutrition.
That was my next question. Yes. How in the world do you nourish them?
And the very small baby, we have to feed by vein. And we give, it's called hyperalimentation. And we can give proteins and fats and lipids, and we put it in the right concentration. So they get all the nutrition they need by vein. But when we start feeding down into their stomach area, into the stomach, we have to use a little tube, so the nurses have to put, they obviously are too small to suck on a bottle or a nipple, so we have to tube feed them for, again, some of these children up to a month or two. So the tube goes right down into the stomach, and we just drip very slowly. Formula, the best formula is mother's milk, so we encourage our mothers to pump, and we actually have a whole room in our nursery that's for breast pumping. It's a little private room with a, you know, television and an area where moms can go and pump, and then we freeze it. We have a big freezer where we put all our breast milk. So when we feed the babies, we start with mom's milk first. If mom isn't choosing to breastfeed, then we obviously have some very special premature formulas. And the companies that make these formulas have really focused on trying to match mother's breast milk if they can. So those formulas we'll use as substitute when sometimes mom either have trouble, you know, expressing breast milk the first week or so just because of the stress they're going through. And later we have good breast milk and we can use that. And some mothers just don't choose not to use it.
Are there antibodies in breast milk of mothers that preemies can actually benefit from? I've heard all this mm-hmm. business about term babies. Does this work for preemies as well?
Yes, the first part, the what we call the colostrum, which is the first few breast milk expressions when mom has the first day or so, that has a lot of immune components in it. So that we really like to try to get the babies to take. And again, that's within about the first week that it's important. So if we have a mom that can give us breast milk the first week and then can't after that, then the formulas pretty much match what we need after that week, although we prefer, again, to keep using mom's breast milk if we can.
You touched on this a little bit earlier, but would you go over some mm-hmm. of the kinds of things a pregnant mother-to-be should be doing with the mm-hmm. goal of preventing premature delivery?
Well, I think the key thing is obviously to be followed by a good physician. And so you have the proper checkups, and that physician will then make decisions on how often you need to be seen, when you need to have ultrasounds, which are pictures they take of the baby, and different tests of the baby's status. They have tests where they can tell whether the baby's having any problems. So teaming up with your physician, he or she, is great, and they will help you kind of move down that road in a hopefully a team fashion in a way that will get you there safely. Taking care of yourself is key. Eating properly, the doctors will recommend vitamins for you and folic acid. And these are preventive measures that actually have shown to prevent some congenital defects of folic acid, defects in the spine, the back area. And that's key. It's dramatically changed that. So to not take those vitamins is not a wise choice. So the other is to keep, again, exercise. You should exercise. Your physician will tell you how much and how little. And everyone always asks about drinking. It's better to probably not drink during your pregnancy. People do feel that maybe a glass of wine a day is fine, and that's probably okay. But going beyond that is detrimental to the baby. So that's an area that unfortunately you should probably just give up for the pregnancy and have your glass of wine later. Smoking, that's a hard one, but that's very much associated with definitely smaller babies and prematurity. So that's an area. Obviously, any illicit drugs are not good, and we do have in our nursery a lot of babies born from mothers who are on drugs, and those have potentially long-term complications associated with that. So.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on premature infants.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Billy Short about premature infants.
What kinds of things are usually done for a premature baby in a hospital? You talked about the obvious, the lungs and so forth, mm-hmm. and the feeding and so on. Are there other things we should know about? And can you give a general sense of how long a baby has to stay in the hospital?
Yeah, unfortunately, the how long you stay is really based on your gestational age. So if you're born at 23, 24 weeks, you're going to be in the hospital 2 months. So if you're born at 28 to 30 weeks, you'll probably be there a month or 6 weeks. And if you're born at 32 to 34 weeks, you may only be there a couple of weeks because those babies are doing so well now. So, again, depending on how early the baby's born is how long. We usually tell moms when their due date is about the time that we're going to be able to get you home. It's the earliest, usually not before then. But so the typical baby, premature babies need heat, so they'll be placed usually in an isolette, which is a little box that keeps their temperature warm. And many of them will have bilirubin problems, which are a little yellow area in the skin. This is very common in all babies, not just preemies, but the preemies tend to have it longer. So this is something we take care of with some special lights that just we shine a little light on the baby and it makes this yellow color go away. So, but they have to have a mask on when they're on this. So when parents come in to visit, they may see the baby with a little mask on, and that's just to keep the light from shining in their eyes. So it's protective. The big thing when you're in the hospital, you're going to be working with a team, and your nurses will be your best friend and your physicians, and that team should hopefully meet with you at very key periods and as often as you need. And many nurseries now are letting parents on rounds when the doctor's actually round, be there with the whole team so you can ask your questions, because parents have lots of questions, but what you'll find is you'll leave the nursery and you just can't remember what that important one was. Write them down. Most parents I advise keeping a logbook and writing all their questions and their answers so they can, because it's a long period of time you're going to be with your team. So take those forward and get them all answered.
And then when parents take home this little premature baby, what should they be watching for?
Yes, this is I think the most exciting point, obviously, but extremely scary. And many of our parents, like I said, can be in our nursery for a month to 2 months. So when you're going home, you're losing your family who's been surrounding you. And so we have a practice period for our parents. We have a rooming in area where they actually come. It's a little bedroom area that's set up to where they can spend the night with their child. And we actually hope to expand that. We only have one. We'd like to have four or five more. We're going to renovate in the next few months or so to allow parents to stay longer than just one night. Because if they're going home, many of the preemies have to go home either with a little oxygen support, which is oxygen by a little tube that goes right across the bottom of the nose, and the parents have to learn how to take care of that. So they're taught CPR, which is just for emergencies, and they get that little test run in our room with the nurses right outside the door. Again, the premature baby can have what we call apnea, which is periods where they kind of stop breathing, and some of them need a little monitor to tell you if that's happening, but you're not sent home unless that's stable. But you'll have a monitor that you might have to learn how to take care of. And again, those are things we want parents to feel very comfortable with when they get home.
So the normal procedure is for the mother to go home, herself after a couple of days in the hospital and mm-hmm. then come back every day at a certain time to see the baby and
yes.
then the night before they're supposed to be released to come back and spend the night?
Correct.
Okay. How common is this, by the way, or is this just Children's Hospital in Washington?
I think the majority of large nurseries have a sleeping in area. Most of them, all of the nurseries being built today, many of them actually have private rooms now. So the newer hospitals will have even more support for that for parents. At least that's the designs I've seen around the country. Mm-hmm. You should be getting more involved with your child's care as you get closer to going home. You should start doing more things that nurses will teach you. If they need you to change the diapers, learn how to do the bathing, which is different for a preemie. Feeding is very different, so they will teach you all of the techniques of the doing the preemie feeding, how to hold them, how to get the nipple to work correctly. Many moms do breastfeed by the time they go home. We encourage that. And again, your team should be working with you and have a whole discharge plan laid out for you 2 or 3 weeks before you go home.
Well, we talked about going home at the beginning, but what about long-lasting effects of premature birth? Have any of these been studied? Do we know what happens to these kids later mm-hmm. on?
Yeah, we have actually a lot of data looking at long-term effects. Now, the data to look at long-term effects, you have to be out long-term. So most of our data looking at five-year follow-up is 5 years old. So it expresses what treatment was done 5 years ago. So that's the caution I put, because our treatment just changes dramatically every year. But what we know, obviously, the smaller baby who has a higher risk of having the bleeding in the brain is at a higher risk for having developmental problems. And this can range from anywhere just from having muscle problems like cerebral palsy, which is muscle weakness in different areas, and that can be mild or severe, to having learning disabilities. And we know that bleeding in the brain, and there's four different levels, and if you're at the level 3 or 4, that's a fairly high risk for having developmental problems, where if you don't have a bleed, then you're at a lower risk category. We know that different drug exposures set these kids up to have learning disabilities. Cocaine can have learning. Alcohol is very severe mental retardation associated with that. So we know some of the risk factors, and as they go through their course in the nursery, the doctors should be talking to the parents about what concerns they have, what the studies are ongoing as far as we all do ultrasounds of the brain, which is a picture of the little brain, and we can tell them whether there's a bleed there or not. And that's routine. They should be asking those questions about, or the parents should ask questions about the findings of that and what it means long term. The other area I haven't really discussed is, the toxicity to the eyes and the very small preemies. There's can have some eye damage from the oxygen that's life-saving again, but we have to give them. And again, luckily, the majority of those are very mild and result in some kids having to have reading glasses earlier than they would term baby, who would grow up and maybe in high school have glasses. But these little kids down at 3 or 4 years of age may need glasses. And there's very few, but occasionally a child who actually has severe damage and can be blind from this. So again, that risk is down at the 23, 24-week gestation, much higher than that. When you get up, that risk really drops off. But the big thing, again, as you're going through, write your questions down, ask your doctor, ask your team. They should be taking you through this road, not just at the end, but you should be having this information through your whole hospitalization.
Dr. Short, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want or feel they need to learn more about premature babies?
I think one of the best resources is to go to the March of Dimes website, because they have a whole campaign now on prematurity. If you think of the March of Dimes in the past, it's been focusing on birth defects, but one of their huge emphases now is prematurity and prevention of prematurity. So they've got great resources there. And their website is www.marchofdimes.com. And then they have a section there called Prematurity. They have a book, which is great, too. Their book is called Preemies, The Essential Guides for Parents of Premature Babies. So this kind of really walks you through what you're going to be dealing with in the nursery. On their website also, there's several other book resources that you can read, and many of these had input by parents. So So I would go to their website. One website I found extremely helpful from a local parent in our area who had a premature baby at 28 weeks who died of an infection. And the mother and father put together a website called Spencer's Hope. And Spencer obviously was his name. And they've done this in his memory. But this is a huge resource. It's got great material about all types of areas of prematurity and also links you on to other webs, sites that can get you more information. So spencershope.org. And it's org instead of com. So that's the trick. Sometimes you put the wrong end on, you won't get there. So they also have a good list of books and information for you to help you out.
Well, Dr. Billy Short, you have given us a tremendous amount of information to help us out, and all of our parents and caring adults who are listening learned an awful lot today. So thank you very much for being with us.
Great. Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And mention show number 226. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.